Cultivate Simple, episode 32. It's the little things.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainsides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend.
Welcome to Cultivate Simple, an honest and unrehearsed discussion about trying to live a more simple life. And this is episode 32, and today we are talking about small ways to live a healthier life. Almost got through that one. before we do that, we're going to start off with the quote of the week. So the quote of the week, Dalen has left us. Well, temporarily.
Yeah.
He's
actually coming back next week.
He had a couple things to take care of back in Ohio, so he headed to Ohio for a couple weeks. And so we haven't had Dalen's quote of the week last week or this week. And we've kind of missed having him around.
Every now and then. Yeah. He's like the super excited to try the water buffalo was when
that the was, whole. That water kicked, buffalo liver, wasn't
water
it?
Water buffalo liver that kicked off the whole.
Yep.
So quote of the week.
This week, Susie had a really good one. She said, "Let me go inside and get the earthworm cocoons out of the fridge." That's, I don't know.
Never a dull moment.
That's just the things you hear around here.
The funniest thing is that they traveled with us from Ohio.
The earthworm cocoons?
Yep. Huh. Because I bought them.
Are you allowed to take earthworm cocoons across state Probably lines without not. A permit? We'll have to ask our neighbor Matt about that.
He's familiar with all of the
fount of all knowledge.
What can and cannot cross state lines.
Usually he tells us after we've already performed the act.
We haven't done anything. We haven't broken any laws.
I didn't say what it was. Nothing can be pinned on us.
It's like you're not allowed to sell less than three or six chicks here in Maine. You can't sell one chick to someone.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Crazy.
You'll never get me, coppers!
You can keep them in a box the size of the iPad, you know, when they're adults, but you can't sell less than three.
Exactly.
Crazy.
So that was one of Susie's quotes of the week. I'm sure we had some others, but
yeah, I forgot them. There are probably many funny quotes every day, but
there are plentiful. But we went and another one.
It's funny.
Actually, I should tell about the fail of the week since I'm sitting here still nursing my finger from earlier, but
I thought you were going to talk about eating a spoonful of peanut butter over the podcast, which you decided was a bad idea right after we finished.
It's been a fun weekend, a bit of a relaxing weekend. We got a lot done around Chiyot's run here. We did a lot of work outside, and I did some work on the chicken coop. Opened up a couple of the windows because they needed some more ventilation in there. They were all sitting with their wings
were all panting last night.
Their wings fluffed out. It's been in the, I think, almost 90 degrees or 92 degrees for the past couple of days here in Maine. It's finally cooling down. We're getting some rain right now, but yeah, the chickens were just hot.
Poor chickens, yeah. They've been camped out under the back porch. They run from their coop to under the back porch, and then they. Chickens, if you've never seen them kind of lay to cool off, they kind of flop over on their side and stretch one or two of their legs out straight, and they kind of flop over in the dirt to get, you know, like maximum cooling on the dirt. And it's just really funny, but they all lay under our back porch where it's nice and cool, and it's just dirt under there. So they've been camped out under there keeping cool.
So we decided to open up the chicken coop a little bit. So that's what I did today, is took some of the windows out because the windows were screwed into the chicken coops. You couldn't open them. So I took them out and put hardware cloth behind them so that you can get a really good cross ventilation in there, and it really cooled down nicely in there. So the chickens are happy. And what else did we do? Oh, so anyway,
I
back to the...
A bunch.
You mowed.
I planted the 5x5 challenge garden.
Mm-hmm.
More on that Wednesday on the blog.
Definitely. And if you haven't joined the 5x5 challenge, you can check that out at 5x5challenge.com. Get the plug in. But yeah, back to where this story started and where it was going. So we went up to feed the pigs tonight, and we're still just really enjoying the pigs and having a good time with them, learning a lot on what to do and what not to do. But Susie's been feeding them what she has dubbed, what do you call it?
Yeah, that was the quote of the week, actually, originally. Let me see. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I don't know. I thought I put that in there. Yeah. Chicken gizzards are like pig bubblegum.
Yeah, pig bubblegum. That's what it is. So Susie's been giving the pigs chicken gizzards just to supplement their food and to give them a little snack every once and again. And so they when they chew on them, it's like they're chewing bubblegum. They're hilarious. So anyway, that is just a huge ant. Well, you can... There's an ant crawling down the wall right now, and Susie is going to get a piece of toilet paper to kill it. We found that we discovered we have some ants in upstairs bedroom too, so we put some borax down to take care of those. Yeah. But anyway, back to my story. So the pig, we went up there tonight to feed the pigs, and we were going to give them a couple chicken gizzards. And Susie always just feeds them to the pigs out of her hand. And so, you know, I wanted to feed one of the pigs a chicken gizzard, and so I handed it to it. But I didn't know that there was a special way that you hold them. Now, I grew up, you know, my friend had a horse, and so I always knew that when you fed a horse an apple, you put it in your flat hand and just put the apple on top, because then the horse can't bite your fingers. I was not aware that you probably need to do that for pigs, too, when you're feeding them chicken gizzards. So I just kind of handed the pig the chicken gizzard, and it clamped down on one of my fingers and tried to take it with it. So my fingers, it's still kind of red and a little bit puffy.
It didn't break the skin or anything.
No, it didn't break the skin, but it hurt. I felt it's kind of the same feeling when you slam it in a door. Oh.
Pigs are giving you a lot of experience. He also shocked himself.
Oh my gosh. I almost died this week.
quite heartily with the electric fence. We were up there, what, feeding the pigs, right?
Yeah. And you were like, it's so stupid.
You're like, is this fence on? And I'm like, yeah, it's on. And so you're like touching it, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, is it on? I don't think it's on. And right then you jumped like 5 feet in the air. And you're like,
I was holding it for about 10 seconds, and I think it snaps every 3 seconds or 5 seconds. So I was like, what's the deal? Did this thing shut off? What's going on? Yeah, but it just...
gave you quite a jolt. Man, that fence is hot.
That fence is really hot. Oh, so yeah, I've never noticed it before, but I have kind of a bruise across my chest, and that's kind of where I felt like the shock. So I don't know.
I think that was there.
You think it was? Yeah. Yeah, anyway, and the black flies are finally calming down. We've been black flies. If you don't know what those are, you can look them up on Wikipedia, but they are the state bird of Maine, or so some people say. But they basically are little flies bigger than gnats that bite, and when they bite, they draw blood. They're pretty nasty little creatures. So in working outside this week, I have several black fly bites. Now, Matt, our neighbor, the fount of all knowledge, did inform us that after 2 days of 80 degrees, the black flies usually... die down. So they're still out, and we had 2 days of 90 degrees. So I'm going to have to check my...
They're not that bad, though.
Yeah, I know, but one is bad enough. And another thing, so here's an interesting... This is like random topics at the top of the show.
It's going to be another stew episode. We're going to have to rename it.
So I was doing some reading on one of the blogs that I frequent, and... they were talking about mosquitoes and black flies and chiggers and different biting insects. And I read on there that vitamin B1 or thiamin,
AKA thiamin,
repels mosquitoes and black flies. So I'm going to get some, I'm going to get a vitamin B, vitamin V. Jeez. Yeah. Eating peanut butter before a podcast is not a good idea. Vitamin B complex caplet. And
I don't know if you want a complex. Can you just get the thiamin?
Well, vitamin B is one of those vitamins that you have to take, like, in order for absorption. This is what I read, which ties into our topic tonight, that in order for absorption to happen, you have to take, like, the gamut of vitamin Bs. So,
you're going to end up with niacin flush. And maybe we'll be talking about that in a future podcast.
Yeah, well, anyway, back to what I was saying before I was rudely interrupted. I'm going to pull the plug on your microphone. So anyway, I'm all excited about this thing, and Susie keeps... So they said that if you take vitamin B1, that it repels mosquitoes, that they might land on you, but they won't bite. So I'm going to try it out and see, because we have, here in Maine, we have a lot of water. And if you walk through our woods, there's, you know, back in Ohio, we would always go around our property in the spring and in the summer and, you know, dump out buckets that have been sitting there and had standing water in them, or flush out our rain barrels and different things so that we didn't have standing water around the property. Well, here in Maine, there is standing water everywhere on the property, because there's just divots and gullies throughout the whole property. And of course, you know, as we're getting rain right now, it all drains down into there. And then we have a lot of standing water. So we have a decent amount of mosquitoes, and they breed them big up here.
There are big mosquitoes up
here. Yeah, they are. It's like carry you away mosquitoes. So
they were swarming us the other day as we walked up. We went to the local ice cream shop with our neighbor, and she dropped us off at the bottom of the driveway so we could get the mail, because we usually walk down there. But it happened to be right at that hour when the mosquitoes are out in full force.
Right when the sun's starting to go down. And
like right when it's starting to get dark.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a swarm chased us back up the driveway. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, I looked over behind Susie, and they were literally swarming behind her head. So we started kind of running and flailing, and it's a good thing nobody can see us, because they'd have thought we were crazy. But so that's the show, folks. Good night. No, we're just a few random thoughts at the top of the show there. So make sure you keep your fingers out of the way when you're feeding pigs chicken gizzards. That's a quote of the week. So the thing that we're going to talk about tonight, or the topic for this evening, is the small ways to live healthier, or to live a more healthy life.
We should put eating. It's mostly eating.
Mostly eating tips.
Yeah, kind of.
But this was prompted by a couple of emails that you received. And do you want to read these emails?
Sure, I can. Okay. After last week's episode, when I talked about the beverage we were drinking that contained some gelatin, Amy wrote and said, "Susie, I've heard you mention eating gelatin several times now. I've tried making my own broth, but so seldom eat meat that it's proving to be a problem. Would Knox gelatin be the same as Great Lakes brand? If not, which Great Lakes product are you using? I've been researching the benefits, and it looks as if it would really help me." So I wrote her back and said, you know, I use the Great Lakes Bovine, which comes in the red can. The green is the porcine, or the pig, derived from pig. And then they have another kind that's like a collagen kind of one that's supposed to be more easily assimilated by your body. I use the Great Lakes red can, or the bovine. It's kosher. But I wouldn't use the Knox, because it's not, you want to go with something that's made from pastured animals, so it's the healthiest that it can be. I mean, if you're taking it or adding it to your diet as kind of a supplement kind of thing, you want to make sure it's the best one that you can get. That's what I would recommend. But then, so I emailed her back that information and about how I don't use too much of it. I'll talk about this a little bit later. But, you know, I mean, some people take tons of it, but gelatin can be like detoxing to your liver, so it can cause some issues if you go overboard as far as that end of things as well.
It can be detoxing?
It detoxes, yeah. Like there, if you read online, I mean, some of the stuff about gelatin is kind of crazy, but yeah, a lot of people will take it if they use drugs.
Mm.
and they need to have a drug test for work. They like go crazy, and I assume there's some sort of a regimen. I've never really researched it, but I know that people use it to detox their liver and their bodies from the drugs so that they test negative for the drug tests. I mean, that's kind of how detoxing it can be.
And isn't that tip worth a $5 a month subscription, folks?
I'm not sure that our listeners are trying to pass drug tests by using gelatin. But
and if you would like to support the podcast.
That's what I've read. So, I mean, it is, if it can detox that, it's a pretty powerful, you know, detoxification thing. So, but then that brings some other negative side effects as well. So, I mean, I've never used it for detox. I just kind of add a little bit to my diet here and there for the health benefits, right. You know, but Google that if you want to. I'm sure it's some interesting reading. But anyway, so explain that. We'll talk a little bit more about gelatin a little bit later on in the show. So, Amy wrote back and said, I think gelatin and bone broths would be an excellent topic to discuss. Blah, blah, blah. I won't go into some of the stuff she talks about. But then she said, perhaps a show on healthy lifestyle habits. The show you did with the guest speaker on flora was wonderful for enlightening us about pollinators and making us aware of what could be used by humans as well medicinally. She said she has oil pulled for several years, found it to be tremendously beneficial, yoga, but she wants to hear more about other listeners' daily healthy habits so that, because she thinks she might learn something helpful. So I thought that would be neat that we could talk about that and then everybody could add their kind of daily healthy habits into the comment section. I always find those kind of interesting too, things like Sally Fallon, who wrote Nourishing Traditions, drinks. As soon as she gets up in the morning, she drinks water with some lemon in it, which is good for your body. It's kind of a detox kind of a thing too, but it just kind of gets everything going. She also drinks bitters in the morning. But anyway, so I thought, yeah, we could do a podcast about little healthy things that you can do. Little things, not like turning everything upside down, but just maybe things you can add here and there to kind of...
Yeah, that's kind of the first point, is don't go crazy with it.
Yeah.
Especially when you start off.
Especially if you have a family that you're cooking for.
Right. Because if you don't want to... You always said in the beginning, whenever we started to change our eating habits, and people would say, you know, what are you guys doing? Or, you know, geez, you guys are losing a little bit of weight, or, you know, whatever comment would be made. Mm-hmm. And we decided early on that we wouldn't say that we were on a diet, because, you know, that has the word die in it. But it's a lifestyle change.
But we weren't
really
on a diet. We were just changing some of our eating habits.
Well, you're changing your diet.
Yeah.
Along with other things. But anyway, but it is a lifestyle change. It's different, but it doesn't have to be made all overnight. Mm-hmm. It can be made over time, and it should be, as like Susie said, especially if you're cooking for your family, because if your family rebels against it, or, you know, doesn't like it, or turns the other way on it, then obviously it's not going to benefit them. But if you make the changes slowly, and I think the biggest realization that people have when they eat with us or hear the stuff that we eat is that healthy eating is not
bland or bad,
or boring, or yeah, it's actually really good if it's done correctly or properly or in a smart way. So those are a few of the things that we're going to talk about tonight.
And I think everything, I'm trying to pick all things that are pretty easy to incorporate, that you're not going to get a ton of pushback from family members on. You know, most of these things are pretty easy to do, I would say.
Right. Well, and many of them enhance what you're already doing. Yeah. One thing that we've noticed, we went out to eat, which is something we rarely do, but we did it twice this weekend, which is kind of crazy. But one thing we noticed, even about restaurant food nowadays, is that it's just very bland. It's very plain. And so, you know, some of these things that we're going to talk about actually enhance the way food tastes and makes it better. Mm-hmm. So it's not all bad. Actually, not much of it's bad. Well, I'll talk about one thing that is. but the other encouragement, starting out at the top of the, before we get into, you know, any tips, is not to believe everything you read.
Yes. And in fact, I'll recommend a book called The Unhealthy Truth here. And it's very good. It's particularly good if you have kids, because it's geared towards kids. And it's geared towards making changes in your life. If you have kids and you've been kind of rearing your kids as far, like, kind of normal American culture, where your kids are eating, you know, goldfish and chicken nuggets and that kind of thing. She, you know, that's what her family was doing. And one of her kids started having health problems, had an allergic reaction to eggs, and she started researching and wrote this book, which is really phenomenal. And this book is especially good to make you realize that you shouldn't believe everything you read and you shouldn't jump on the latest health bandwagon, because you never know exactly who's paying for all those studies. We'll take, we can take soy and flax as examples. 10 years ago, they were both touted as like the healthiest thing you could include in your diet, and everything started having flax and soy in it. But what you didn't hear is that, you know, most of the soy, I think 95% of the soy in this country and a lot of the flax, is genetically modified. So, of course, they became super healthy after the genetic modification was approved.
Super healthy, started, with air quotes around it.
Yeah, and they started, and I'm not saying these things aren't healthy in their, in consumed in certain ways, but I'm not so sure that I want to be eating mass quantities of genetically modified flax. I still include flax in my diet, but it's always organic and it's always in, you know, in things. It's like anything. You don't want to be like gelatin. You want to include gelatin in your diet. You don't need to be eating, you know, a half a cup of powdered gelatin a day, because that's going to be worse for you than not eating the gelatin, probably.
Well, and we've,
you
know, talked about that before, how everything, I mean, everything in moderation.
Yeah.
You know, you don't overdo anything, because then it becomes bad.
Right.
I mean, that's the way everything is.
Yep.
So yeah, don't
believe everything you read. And then
everything we say either.
No. But yeah, do your own research and come to your own conclusions. But things like soy, I mean, let's mention soy. Soy was like everything you should read. And the book I mentioned talks about this particularly. You know, the American Heart Association put its stamp of approval on it. Well, then it comes out to find that mass quantities of soy, particularly the kind that is included in most of the processed food in this country, actually isn't healthy for you. And it's actually detrimental to your health, particularly because it screws up your hormones. The American Heart Association kind of pulled their stamp of approval of soy, but you never heard about that in the news.
Right.
So you have to be really careful.
You always
careful
just hear about when it gets a stamp of approval, not when it pulls the stamp of approval.
Yeah, and so everybody still thinks it's super healthy, even though there have been a lot of studies disproving that and actually proving that it's detrimental. Now, if you're eating naturally fermented soy products, that kind of thing, not a big deal. You know, it's, you don't have to necessarily worry about those. You still don't want to be eating those in mass quantities, I'm sure, like anything else. But yeah, so that's something to think about when you hear about the latest and greatest, what's healthy and
be
what's
sure
not, you know, like don't eat butter for a long time. You shouldn't eat eggs because they had cholesterol in them. And, you know, just the wishy-washy and flip-floppiness of all this stuff should tell you that you just need to kind of go with your gut, eat whole real foods, and not worry about a lot of the other stuff.
And it's been like that for a long time. I mean, I can even remember my grandma when I was a kid talking about how, you know, they would say how this was bad for you, how butter was bad for you, and so everybody switched to this other product,
to Crisco or whatever,
to margarine, you know, and then they find out later, oh, that's bad for you too, so you should use this stuff over here, and
so
then you find out that
canola oil,
canola
is genetically modified, and it's not super great if it's been heated to high temperatures, and it, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So
So then it comes back around to...
Now everybody's... Now lard's back in business. Yeah. And everybody's talking about how healthy lard is, which, you know, you should have been eating lard all along whenever you can find, like, a natural, less processed mm-hmm. kind of a...
So before we even get into these, but this is one thing, when you're doing research, are there certain sources that you trust, or do you just try to kind of read a lot of different sources and sort of combine all the information that you get? How do you make your decisions?
I typically try to go with things that most likely my great-great-great-grandparents would have recognized as food. And when I want to make choices, if I have a choice between two products, I'm going to go with the one that's been around for 400 years or 2,000 years or whatever, as opposed to the one that they're telling me is healthier than that now. Or I'm going to look at the labels and pick the one that doesn't have weird crap in it. Mm-hmm. So if I have my choice between butter or margarine, mm-hmm. so the ingredients in butter are cream. Mm-hmm. Or cream and salt, if you're buying salted butter. And the ingredients in margarine are who knows what, but it takes up the whole side of the jar or the right. tub or whatever. So I'm not going to choose that option. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just kind of one of those, I think you can have a gut feeling about it. I read a lot. I typically don't put a lot of weight into a lot of scientific studies. Generally, if I read one, I try to figure out who funded it, and that mm-hmm. usually debunks it right there, because it takes so much money to do a lot of these studies. They're often funded by the very industries that it's being proven, the companies that are making the products, or there are often weird relations between companies and charities and that kind of thing, you know, like Kraft and the Allergy Foundation and that kind of thing. So I tend to be leery of pretty much anything that's backed by a big corporation or a big well-known charity, because there's a lot of money behind all those organizations, and that means there's a lot of chance for
impropriety,
swaying of things.
Mm-hmm.
To be. And I mean, you know, there are things that are healthy and then they find out they're not healthy, you know, things that they, you know, they swore were perfectly safe.
Yeah.
Science proved it as safe.
Yep.
And yet 30 years later, they find out that it's not. So even then, I mean, everything has to be taken with a grain of salt, really. Mm-hmm. So I always just try to go back to kind of the traditional things that have been around for a long time, and I think in your gut, you kind of know.
Yeah. Yeah. It may sound a little, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, but typically whenever people, with Susie and I, whenever people tell us that there is science and that it's fact, we get kind of suspicious about it, because just for somebody to say, oh, well, there was a scientific study done about this, it's like, okay, well... who, why, how, who's the control group, you know, how many people were in this study? Because a lot of times
like 18 people. And
yeah.
Seriously, you 18 can't people? Take that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and they're all, you know, from right. one culture group and from one city and one... Yeah. So
you definitely have to be careful with the scientific studies. I mean, when possible, I try to go read them. I don't know how many people do, which it can be frustrating, because generally they're not noted... Mm-hmm. in the article. And if an article doesn't note the scientific study that it's,
mm-hmm.
I don't believe anything that article says, because how do I know that? I mean, if they're trying to interpret it for me, but they're not willing to link back to what they read, I'm going to say that they're completely full of it, because if they don't want me to go back and read what they're reading and double check,
just take their word for it,
then I think that they're probably not,
mm-hmm.
you know.
It's like all the news stories we've been noticing recently in the news, how all news stories, the source doesn't, on the condition of anonymity. It's like, really?
Unconfirmed.
Yeah, unconfirmed. These are unconfirmed reports, but we're gonna use this voice in order to convince you to be scared. So anyway, So let's get into some of these things. That's right. We've been talking about what they are and how small things to live healthier lives. So let's talk about them a little bit.
The first one I think I've talked about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Add more herbs and spices to your diet.
Mm-hmm.
And I've mentioned this many times before. It's the perfect way to just add more flavor to your food, make your food taste better. And herbs and spices are by far the healthiest thing you can add to your diet. A tiny bit of spice is just as healthy as a big serving of vegetables. I mean, it's amazing. And when you add them, they have kind of symbiotic relationships with different vegetables. I mean, there's a reason that traditionally specific herbs and spices are always used with certain things, because they kind of have a relationship together. They taste well together. A lot of times one of the herbs will make, one of the little phytochemicals or antioxidants in this herb will help you better absorb something out of that food. I mean, there's a lot of, it's not science, mm-hmm. generally, but it's a lot of kind of knowledge and wisdom and a lot of good stuff that has been passed down through the ages and that has developed some of these relationships and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll mention a book here, and I've mentioned it before, called, I just blanked on it.
Is it The Healing Spices?
Healing Spices, yes. I love that book. And just last week, we've been eating goulash that I made using the recipe from this book. And it's phenomenal. It's a great goulash recipe. And it uses a third of a cup of paprika in it, which seems like a lot of paprika. But then it also adds some caraway seeds, which helps cut the harshness of the paprika. So it really balances it out, and it makes a really, really good goulash. And it's just so healthy because it's full of all kinds of spices. But it's not like it's not like super spicy or super hot or anything. But yeah, I mean, great, great book. Lots of great recipes. Gives you, I mean, just a phenomenal resource to have around. And once you read it, you're going to understand why you need to try to figure out how to incorporate a wide variety. I mean, even if you just incorporate, like, try to come up with a new one each week that you can put in. Buy a thyme plant and put it in the garden. And thyme's one of those things you can pretty much throw in everything, and it always balances it out. And tastes great with just about everything. So I would recommend thyme for sure. Basil makes some pesto. I mean, talk about a phenomenal, healthy, herbal deliciousness right there with the with the basil and the garlic and, herbs and spices. If you only mm-hmm. make one change in your diet, I'm going to recommend adding herbs and spices.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my top one right there. And it's so easy.
Well, and it's good
and
to plant.
So good.
If you're just getting into gardening too, because herbs and spices are fairly easy to grow.
Really easy to grow.
Right. Well, yeah, spices obviously you can't. I mean, well, there are some, but
yeah.
Not many that right. you can grow, depending on where you live, actually. But yeah, with herbs, you could have an herb garden that then. Whenever you're doing your cooking, you can go out, pick some mm-hmm. fresh herbs, throw it into whatever you're cooking. And then, of course, you're getting all of the oils and all mm-hmm. of the nutrients right there in those herbs, since right. they're fresh as they can possibly be. Another thing that you can do, too, is to drink teas and herbal teas,
right.
Which, again, you can grow a lot of the
right.
herbs for your teas. So,
right.
There's
one in particular I want to mention, or two, I would think. There's one called Seasons of Discontent from Mountain mm-hmm. Rose Herbs. I get all my teas, spices, herbs. I always get organic, and I always get them from Mountain Rose Herbs. I'll put a link in the show notes. I'm an affiliate with them. I've been mm-hmm. buying from Mountain Rose Herbs forever. And then, so I was pretty happy when they started an affiliate program, because I buy tons of stuff from them mm-hmm. and I love their stuff. I get my organic cocoa powder from them. I mean, they sell pretty much anything you need as far as herbs, spices, that kind of stuff. There's one called Seasons of Discontent, which is good for like the allergy season. So it's really good to drink in the summer. It's got stinging nettle. Google stinging nettle and the health benefits and you'll be amazed. I mean, just really, really good for you. Really great tonic herb to drink. There's another one I like called Blossoms of Health, I think it's called. They've changed some of the names of some of the teas, so I always know the old name. And then there's one called Vita Blend, which is the one I drink most often, which is just like a blend of vitamin-rich herbs. So it has, I think, some red clover, and I think it might have stinging nettles and peppermint, and, you know, herbs that are really healthy and vitamin rich, but nothing you're going to have to worry about overdosing on. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very kind of, you don't have to worry too much about these. So, you know, some herbs, you're not going to OD on herbs, putting it in your recipes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you drink too much of one kind of tea, you know, you should kind of be careful and mix it up. Things like raspberry leaf, you know, you shouldn't drink if you're pregnant, that kind of thing. But
mm-hmm.
For the most part, drink the benign herbal teas, like, you know, the Vita Blend tea, Seasons of Discontent, that kind of stuff, and then do a little bit more research and maybe try some other ones. Right now, during the podcast, I'm drinking vanilla rooibos tea, which mm-hmm. is phenomenal. Rooibos tea is red, a really pretty, like, red color, and super healthy, full of all kinds of goodness. So I rarely drink a glass of water. I make a big half-gallon jar of tea. I boil water at night, put the tea in the mason jar, and then I pour hot water on it, and I let it sit in the counter overnight. And then in the morning, I just put a piece of cheesecloth over the mouth of the jar, and then I pour cups of tea all day. And in the summer, that's great. I'm not a big cold beverage person, but if you are, you could pour it over some ice cubes or throw it in the fridge. But in the winter, I'll often heat it up and drink it hot. But
and another thing that you started doing this summer, or this spring, I guess, was making kind of little Jell-O cubes, or
yes, they're
Jell-O jigglers.
Yeah, they're Tulsi tea. It's kind of like an immune boosting treat, I guess. I mean, I don't know. It's not really a treat. But it's
well, it is. It's I was gonna say, this is a good way if you want your kids to eat them,
yeah,
or to get the benefits of herbal tea.
And this is it would be a great way to get your kids like to eat all kinds of healthy goodness. So yeah, I take I usually make a 1/2 gallon because I always make a double batch of everything. So in a 1/2 gallon, I'll throw in some Tulsi, which is holy basil, which is a really good immune boosting tea. If you're sick, definitely drink holy basil tea. So I throw holy basil in there. I throw in astragalus root, which astragalus is also really good at boosting your immune system. You know, helps you not get cancer. If you do have cancer, it helps your immune system fight the cancer. Really, really, and really great thing to incorporate in your diet. And then I also throw, the Vita Blend tea in there. Now, of course, you could use some other things if you want to. You could do some rooibos. That would be really good. But I do these specifically for the immune boosting, and we do it in the summer because it's tick season up here in Maine, and we have a lot of deer ticks, and they can carry Lyme disease. Now, of course, you know, your risk of getting that, a lot of people go a little crazy about that. You know, mm-hmm. I try to be pretty laid back about that and boost my immune system and not really worry about it. Tick check every night, yank off any that you find, and, you know, go about my business. But so yeah, so I do this. I make a big 1/2 gallon of that, and then I mix gelatin in with it so it'll gel, and then I throw it in the fridge in a big Pyrex, and then I cut it into little cubes. Or I mix some honey in. I forgot about that. You mix a little bit of honey in it once it's cooled down, and then the gelatin, and so sweeten it to your own liking.
Yeah.
If you have kids, you might want it a little sweeter. I make mine barely sweet, but the honey is also good for your immune system and for, you know, giving you some natural allergy kind of relief or
but that's in the area. That's but, just yeah. to point out too that it's an interesting way to incorporate something into kind of an everyday, or even into a snack, mm-hmm. you know, because you wouldn't really think about making Jell-O cubes out of tea, but
right.
yet that's a good way to substitute something that then becomes healthy. Mm-hmm. It becomes a health benefit, and yep. it's and you don't care if your kids eat, you know, 10 of them because it's good for them
all
around.
It's good for them. The gelatin's good for them. It has some protein in it because of the gelatin. So yeah, so they're...
And I mean, you could play with that and put spices and put different things in it.
Interesting. You could make milk ones with panna cotta, you know, some vanilla, honey, or maple syrup, that kind of thing. I mean, that's a great snack too.
Mm-hmm.
Put some cinnamon in there, some nutmeg, that kind of stuff. Those kind of spices are... healthy as well. So
yep. So the next one is to add more vegetables to your diet,
which I think everybody knows that's pretty normal, but yeah. I recommend the way I do it, or what I tell people, add them to your breakfast, because the thing is most people, or a lot of people, try to eat one or two with their supper, so adding more seems a little ridiculous. Add them to your breakfast because it's really the easiest place to add them. Start eating eggs in the morning, and you can make a hash with vegetables, or you can make omelets. We eat a lot of omelets stuffed with spinach and cheese and mushrooms and onions and all kinds of stuff. And it doesn't have to be something that takes forever in the morning. You can always cook up a bunch of stuff earlier in the week and have it ready. And then an omelet takes hardly any time at all if you have already all the fillings cooked. Mm-hmm. Or like spinach. I mean, a spinach omelet takes... hardly any time, really. You just chuck the spinach in there and it's pretty much done. But yeah, I recommend breakfast and adding protein to the breakfast.
And
that's
when
a big one for me. I mean, that's one of my... I noticed huge changes in my energy levels and my hunger throughout the day, and not needing to snack, and, you know, just huge, huge benefits to my health when I started eating vegetables and protein. So we generally eat eggs and vegetables for breakfast, sometimes a piece of sourdough toast. We also try to incorporate, I'll talk about it a little later, some sauerkraut or some kimchi, or smoked salmon is good for breakfast. We don't shy away from the meats. When you read about how lard and pastured animal fat is good for you, you're all happy to eat bacon every day for breakfast.
And when it comes to the vegetables too, obviously fresher is better.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we were talking to our friend the other day, and BJ, and she was saying how what was the vegetable when she was growing up?
Peas, I think. Peas and corn. We were talking about both of those.
Always had peas from a can growing up, and how, you know, just kind of disgusting they were.
And then she said, I never knew. She said, and then when, you know, she got married, her husband, or probably when they were dating, and her father-in-law grows a big garden, she said, then I had peas from the garden, and they were so green and so delicious.
But that's true. I mean, again, going back to your family, trying to incorporate more vegetables into a meal.
Real vegetables.
Yeah, if you crack open a can of peas and,
like,
you know, heat them up.
Oh my gosh, I remember my mom cracked open a can of asparagus once, and I think I had to go to the bathroom and throw up. It was terrible just by the smell. So I really didn't try asparagus for a long time after that.
And that's the thing,
I was an adult,
because if it's not good, it'll ruin your, you know, it'll ruin your kids or your, even, you know, your spouse. Because that stuff can be bad. So make sure it is good. And if you don't know how to prepare something, you know, excuse me, you can look it up online. There are tons of cooking videos on YouTube.
Now's a good time to be trying new stuff, because there's so much information out there.
And maybe you should try it yourself. Cook it for yourself once or twice. Mm-hmm. Come up with a good recipe. You know, find a good topping to put on. And with all these things, again, like asparagus, that's another place where you can incorporate a lot of things into that to add flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just serve anything plain.
Right. Well, and you can do things like grate zucchini and add it to your spaghetti sauce.
Mm-hmm.
And then feed it to your family. And when they all talk about how great it is, say, oh, well, there was zucchini in there. And then right there, you've kind of broken down that barrier of, oh, zucchini's weird and zucchini's gross. Yeah. And, oh, well, there was zucchini in there and I liked it. Oh, well, then maybe zucchini's not quite so bad.
Yes. So lost my train of thought. Oh, eating on the wild side?
Yeah, we talked about this book last week. So with your vegetables, try to make them as colorful as possible.
Oh, yeah. Because
the more colorful the vegetable, the healthier it is. And I'm going to add mushrooms in there. A lot of people don't add mushrooms as, like, a vegetable. But mushrooms are really one of the healthiest vegetables you can eat. So we eat tons of mushrooms. Every time I go into the co-op, I buy a huge bag of mushrooms. And we try to eat them probably 3 or 4 times a day.
And that's another one we...
A week.
That's another one that we eat with breakfast quite often.
Yeah, we eat a lot of sautéed mushrooms for breakfast or mushroom omelets. Or sometimes I even make... there's this one dish I make where generally I use leeks. Cut up some leeks, saute it in a pan with some butter, throw some mushrooms in there, and then you throw a couple of ladles of cream or whole milk, whatever you have in there. And then crack some eggs on top, put a lid on it, and poach it, you know, until your eggs are your desired level of doneness, whatever that is for you. Grate some cheese on top and salt and pepper, and that's a good breakfast right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, ridiculously delicious and so easy to make. Oh, and I should mention, rewind back to the spice thing. Get a pepper mill and good peppercorns.
Yeah.
And if anything, start there, because pepper is super healthy, and grinding it fresh is much better than, I call it cardboard in a can. And I always tease my mom because she used to have cardboard in a can. She finally bought a pepper mill because I would take my pepper mill over to her house every time I went over there, and she would always laugh at me. But then she bought one, so I keep her well stocked with organic peppercorns now. But yeah, pepper. I mean, that's as basic as it gets. Make that switch and try real pepper, and it'll be an eye and taste bud opening experience if you've never had freshly ground pepper. And then it'll open up a whole world of deliciousness.
And back to the mushrooms real quick, too. Get good mushrooms.
Yeah.
Because, again, if you're going to open up a can, or if it's, you know...
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the canned.
Just like white mushrooms. I mean, they're...
White mushrooms are okay. They're still okay. Healthy.
Yeah.
You know, and you can incorporate them in some dishes.
But try
dishes,
different kinds, because it's amazing the variety of mushrooms, the tastes and the textures that you can get. So if you don't like a certain kind of mushroom, don't write off all mushrooms.
Right.
Because there are a lot of different ones. Yeah. Well, I didn't hate them. I just didn't. Again, my experience was
canned mushrooms.
Canned mushrooms on pizza from Pizza Hut. You know, that's what I based mushrooms on. You know, and
nothing
then,
like a cremini sauteed in garlic butter.
Yeah, exactly. That is a lot different than a mushroom that comes on a pizza from Pizza Hut.
You mean Italian bistro?
Or an Italian bistro, yes. And one that we didn't have in here, I don't think it's down on the list as I read through, but just something to make your dishes healthier. If you're really into desserts, I love desserts. I have a sweet tooth. Any kind of dessert, I have not met a dessert I don't like. But as we have made a change to more healthy eating, I've noticed that a lot of desserts that I get at restaurants, or it's kind of funny because all the food is too bland. All the food needs more spice, but all of the desserts need less sugar, because it just seems like any dessert that you get anywhere nowadays, or any recipe, I know that with most recipes, when you cook desserts for us, or some sort of baked good or that sort of thing, that usually you cut the sugar by
half at least,
or
sometimes 3/4.
Yeah. Because there's just way too much sugar and stuff, to the point where the next time you make something like a dessert or a pie or cupcakes or a cake or something like that, taste it and see if you can taste anything but sugar.
That's the problem with too much sugar, is then I feel like it overpowers, and then you can't taste all the flavors that are in it. You know, and some things, like say rhubarb is in season right now. Rhubarb should be tart. I mean, that's what makes rhubarb and not a strawberry. And yeah, they mix it with strawberries a lot to kind of cut some of the tartness. But, you know, that's one of the intrinsic beauties of rhubarb. It's a vegetable, right, and it's not supposed to be sickeningly sweet. Now, yeah, sweeten it a little and add something to it. But
yeah,
don't try to make it a pineapple, you know, sweet as a pineapple.
Right.
because that's not what it is.
And my point in saying that is sugar is not bad. It's just that it seems like every recipe has just way too much of it.
Right.
And
you definitely want to cut back on the amount of sugar that you eat, because most people consume way too much sugar.
And I think as a society, we're doing that just because, I mean, people drink pops or sodas and that type of thing. And we just have and high fructose corn syrup is in literally everything. So everything just has a sweetness to it. Mm-hmm. And so it dulls down our level of satisfaction for our sweet tooth.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, you know, we feel like we have to keep making things sweeter and sweeter mm-hmm. and sweeter in order to satisfy that sweet tooth. But again, when you start to make these changes and you start to cut back, and then you start to realize that there are flavors other than just sweet in, you know, cupcakes or in blueberry muffins or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it might be. And then you start to add in more spices too. Like we made that, we talked about it on the show, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, that gingerbread
Hermits.
Yeah, the Hermits. And you know, quadrupled the spices in it and, you know, cut the sugar a little bit. And
yeah.
Did it have sugar in it?
Yeah, it had some sugar in it.
Yeah, and you cut a little bit of sugar out of it. And man, the spices were there, you know. It's just really delicious and spicy, but not, you know, sickly sweet. So yeah, that was just one I threw in there.
Yeah.
So the next one's gelatin. You've been talking about it a lot. So
yeah, I mean, we try to incorporate gelatin. Now, whenever I'm trying to incorporate something in my diet to improve my health, I try to go back to the least processed version. So as far as gelatin is concerned, whenever you have a roasted chicken, chuck all the bones into a pan and then make some stock. I mean, making your own stock is going to be your best source of gelatin because it's going to be your most natural form. So it includes, it's not a product that's been processed and derived. So while, yes, I buy some powdered gelatin and we eat it, I still try to make sure most of my gelatin comes in the natural form of bone broths. And so, yeah, whenever you eat a chicken, make stock and then throw it in the freezer. I like to freeze it in the wide mouth pint mason jars. A lot of them have a freeze line, which is kind of right below the, where you screw on the lid. There's like a little ridge underneath that. And then there's a freeze line right kind of right below that. Yeah, I throw it in the freezer and that, and then I've always got chicken stock on hand. If you have it on hand, you're going to use it a lot more. You can use it in your rice. You can use it. I mean, it comes in super handy. And then beef broth. Buy beef bones from a local farmer. More than likely, you can get them very inexpensively because mm-hmm. they have a hard time getting rid of them. And then you always have some on hand in your freezer whenever you make chili or beef stew, or like when I made the goulash, I throw beef bone in there because it's going to put some gelatin, particularly if you can get like the big knuckly ones. Those are really great. Throw one of those in your soup when you're making soup, and then you don't have to worry so much. You're getting it from its natural form. You're getting all the other minerals and stuff that come from the bones, and you're getting your most natural, less processed form of that. But if you don't, you know, eat a ton of that, and can't find a source for beef bones, then you can buy the gelatin by Great Lakes or Bernard Jansen brand. Those are the two, like pastured brands, and incorporate those into your diet. I'll stir it into hot chocolate sometimes. And mm-hmm. a note on the powdered gelatin, it incorporates best into a room temperature liquid. So if you're going to stir some into your hot chocolate, don't throw a scoop into your hot chocolate because it's going to clump up and then you're going to have like weird gooey bits. But, you know, start warming your milk until it's room temperature. Sprinkle the gelatin on top, whisk it in, and then warm it up the rest of the way. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a tip with the gelatin. Dissolve it in room temperature liquids first and then heat up a little bit to dissolve the rest of the way, and then either chill or drink hot. But,
And then the next one is adding fermented or cultured foods and into every meal.
This should be number two. It should have been number two, I think. Yeah,
as far as importance is concerned.
Yeah, because adding fermented or cultured foods just enhances everything else you're doing. So when you add, I mean, it can be yogurt to your meal, after your meal, whatever. It helps your body absorb more vitamins and nutrients from your food. So, I mean, I think it's really important for people to do that. And there are all kinds of fermented foods out there. Find some new ones, try different ones, buy some miso if you can find some, make sure it's unpasteurized. There's a company in, I'll have to look it up and put it in the show notes. I forget what their name is. But they sell unpasteurized miso. They don't ship in the summer because it's unpasteurized, but come September, you'll be able to buy some from them. It's like South River Miso, I think. And they also sell tamari. So, you know, you like Asian food, get some authentic tamari. Make sure it's the real fermented kind from South River sells it. Then when you add that in, you're getting your traditional fermented. I think what we don't realize is a lot of the condiments that we use now used to be fermented foods, and that's why they're traditionally eaten with the meal. So like pickles, you know, I think, I forget what it is, that the Mennonite women, where it wasn't a real meal unless they had like 12 different kinds of pickles on the table or something like that. I mean, that's the reason that pickles were traditionally eaten with a lot of different things. It's because it was your fermented food that you ate to help you better digest whatever else you were eating. Mm-hmm. And people figured this out by trial and error, kind of, you know. Mm-hmm. Sauerkraut, wonderful fermented food, particularly for breakfast. We eat sauerkraut a lot.
Not sauerkraut from a can or for a bag from the store.
No. When you make it yourself, it's actually quite good. And, you know, it might take eating it a couple times to get used to it. But you realize, too, how good it is for you and how good you feel when you're eating it, it makes it a little easier. I personally love sauerkraut now. I didn't used to like it, but
I didn't like it either. But my experience with it, again, was, you know, my grandparents always bought the bags of sauerkraut, and they would
creep me out.
Cut the top open and dump it into the pan and throw some, you know, kielbasa in there and let it cook for a couple hours. And man, I'd come home and smell that stuff cooking and just be like, oh, geez, I'm going to have to make a run to McDonald's, which, you know, back then. So, yeah, that was not good.
Yeah. So, and, you know, there are other ways. So say you're going to have a salad, this is a great way to kind of talk about or incorporate some of the things we're talking about here. Learn to make your own salad dressing. I mean, super simple. It's basically a third acid, two-thirds oil. Get a good olive oil. Don't feel guilty about eating good olive oil because it's super good for you. And oil on vegetables or fats with vegetables help you absorb more of the minerals. So add in the oil. So whatever, a third acid, two-thirds oil, whisk to emulsify, add some honey in there, add some mustard in there, add some
salt and pepper.
Some salt and pepper for sure. I mean, your acid can be lemon juice, grapefruit juice, lime juice, any kind of interesting vinegar. And then add in spices as you like. So this week we're having salad dressing with kind of a Mexican flair because I have a bunch of cilantro out in the garden. And whenever I harvest cilantro or buy it at the store, I take all the stems and I put it in a jar and top it off with vinegar. So then I have cilantro vinegar. So I use cilantro vinegar and then I put a bunch of cilantro in the salad. And then we have avocados on the salad and eggs. And so it's kind of like a, you know, the fresh, I don't know. It's not really Mexican, is it? We always associate that with Mexican.
Avocado with Mexican.
Yeah, or like Southwest food. Yeah. But yeah, so, and then, you know, change it up. Last month, I made a curried salad dressing, which was really good. So I had ginger and some curry spices. I think I put a little bit of red curry in there. Or you could do like a last month we had lamb burgers, and then I made a harissa paste to go on top of it, and but I mixed that with Greek yogurt to put on top. So then, I mean, that's a great way to get spices and a cultured food into your meal. And on the goulash, when we ate the goulash, we put a big dollop of Greek yogurt on top and kind of mixed it in.
And talk a little bit about yogurt and how, because when I think of yogurt, or when I used to think of yogurt, I would think of the little Yoplait, you know, peel the little thing back and it'd be the, you'd mix in the fruit and that kind of thing. So when you talk about putting yogurt on our goulash,
I'm talking about a plain yogurt. Usually I'm buying a Greek yogurt, or I make my own, actually. I buy a Greek yogurt at the store here that's made with raw milk, and then I use that as a starter for my own for a month or so, and then I buy another jar. But yeah, definitely a Greek yogurt, which is thicker. It has a lot of the whey strand out, so it's a great substitute for cream cheese,
like sour cream.
Sour cream, that kind of thing. So definitely I would recommend trying some Greek yogurt and mix some of that in with your salad dressing to make like a creamy, you know. Oh, I make this one salad dressing that's a lot of dill and yogurt and some garlic. And so it's like a creamy, like it ends up being a really bright green dressing, and it's real creamy and not like ranch, but, you know, it's kind of one of those herby kind of creamy dressings. So yeah, I mean, once you start adding fermented foods, you're just gonna try to figure out how to add more and more. Miso, if you're eating vegetables for breakfast, saute up a bunch of vegetables, make some hash, and when you take it off the heat, stir in a teaspoon of miso, and then great way to add some, stir some of that in your bowls of soup when you serve them at the table. It adds a good, you'll have to add a little bit less salt to your recipes if you're going to be adding miso at the end as a finisher, but yeah, I mean, stir, and it adds an incredible depth of flavor, and especially if you didn't take the time to make a really hearty beef stock, and you just kind of made a vegetable soup or something without it, if you stir in like a really dark miso, I mean, that just adds, I mean, it adds a
another layer,
a layer, like you've been cooking the soup with love for hours and hours and hours. I mean, it's amazing the depth of flavor that something like that'll add to a meal.
And another one that I put in here was that if you find something you like that you buy at a store, or you get at a restaurant, try to make it yourself. A lot of the dishes, especially in restaurants that they make, are not super difficult to reproduce, and then you can tweak it to your taste and add spices and kind of make it yours, and it's a lot cheaper usually.
Yeah.
A lot less expensive. You can feed your whole family for what you would pay for one plate of food at a restaurant. So now we're going to kind of
There's one more that goes towards the food.
Go ahead then.
Filter your water.
Oh.
Well, if you live in an area, if you live in an area that has treated water, I would definitely recommend getting,
if when you turn on the tap, it smells like a swimming pool.
Yeah. And even if not, because our water never smelled like that in Ohio, and we were lucky enough that our water treatment facility or whatever, and I don't know if it's because it was a small private one, I don't know if they all do this, they sent us the water test results every other year. And I always read those, and I always wondered how our water could test higher than the safe levels that the...
Yeah, they'd have the safe level listed as, say, an 8.
Like, yeah.
And our level would be like 15 or 30
and then they would
60.
Say, we are completely fine and in compliance with the laws, which, I mean, I guess that... Whatever. So, yeah, so we got a filter after... It was after I got one of these water things, and I was looking at it, and... You know, our water had some arsenic in it and some other stuff. So we got a water filter and some chlorine and arsenic filters and started filtering our water. But yeah, definitely. If you live in an area where you have treated water, especially if you read about they're in the process, some municipalities are switching from chlorine to another like agent that's supposed to, you know, one of the ones that's supposed to like kill everything, which is kind of an issue health-wise from some of the things that I've read. So you definitely want to think about buying a filter. That's, I think, really important for limiting. I mean, think about it. They're, using chemicals to clean your water. So, and there's stuff in your water that they can't clean out, other chemicals, especially if you live near agriculture. It's just a good idea to... Mm-hmm.
Well, in medicines.
Yeah.
Pharmaceuticals.
It's just a good idea to think about doing that.
Plus, the other benefit of that is that, I mean, you use water in so many things, and then everything that you use water in tastes better.
Yeah,
because you're taking out, for instance, our coffee. Up until the point that we got our water filter, you would use the coffee and it always kind of had a, I don't know, not a chlorine taste, but a chemical taste to mm-hmm. it. Just like a, almost a bitterness.
Yeah.
And when we started using the filtered water, that was gone.
Yep.
And now I notice when we do go somewhere and make coffee, because we've, I know this sounds silly, but we have taken our espresso machine places with us. But when we do that and we use, you know, people's water from the tap or sometimes even bottled water, it just, you can taste the difference in the coffee,
mm-hmm.
Because especially with espresso, you know, that it's kind of concentrates all that. So, yeah, and we highly recommend the Berkey water filters.
We love our big Berkey.
Yeah.
Love it, love it, love it.
In fact, we would love to get another one because we almost can't keep it full. We constantly...
And we carry that with us wherever we go, too.
Mm-hmm.
When we drove out to Seattle, it sits perfectly in the back of our car, and then we pour water in it, and then it's nice because you always have a gallon or a gallon and a half of water as you're on the road, and then we fill half-gallon mason jars in our water bottles from it, so... love our big Berkey. We've been using it for 6-7 years now, I think.
Yeah.
Highly recommend the Berkey. We like it a lot.
The next one, and we're going to kind of move away or start to move away from food. So water, and then I'm going to mention, something that we do every day with our meals since it kind of goes with the food, which is, taking cod liver oil and skate liver oil.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you find out about cod liver oil and skate liver oil, and what made us start?
I read about this? It in Nourishing Traditions, I think, or no, I probably read about it. I read Weston A. Price's book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. And I think he talks about that in there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember for sure. But yeah, we got some and started taking it. And then I read another book called Cure Tooth Decay, and he really is a big advocate for that. So we buy the Green Pastures brand, which is supposed to be the best kind. But yeah, as far as supplements go, it's like the only thing we really take.
And we take 2 teaspoons.
Half teaspoons
of cod liver oil and 1/2 teaspoon of skate liver oil before each meal.
Twice a day. 2 meals a day. So.
Yeah. And it's, once you get used to it, it's usually pretty good. For some reason, we got, one bottle of cod liver oil, this last one.
It's a little rough.
There is something that is...
It's got to be extra healthy because it's pretty fishy.
It is. Wow.
I love fish and I love sardines and I love all that kind of stuff. So it doesn't really bother me to take it. But yeah it's.
What are the benefits of cod liver oil and skate liver oil?
It's got a lot of vitamin D and vitamin A in it. It boosts your immune system. It helps a lot with seasonal affective disorder if you live in the north. It was often taken by the northern Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in the winter because of seasonal affective disorder. I mean, they knew that way back in the day. And so that's what it's especially good for. And I notice a big difference when we take it all winter long. We don't get the vitamin D as much in this neck of the woods because of the sun being so, particularly in the winter.
I mean, days are very short and usually cloudy.
Yep.
So, and another quick tip on this is if you can buy in bulk, it's a lot less expensive.
We go in with our friendly farmers, dairy farmers back in Ohio, and then buy a case with them and a couple other people. So it ends up being cheaper than buying it directly from the place. But even so, I mean, if you're going to buy some kind of supplement, it's probably the one you want to go with.
Speaking of our friendly dairy farmers back in Ohio, Dawn's been tearing up her blog lately. I know. She's been posting almost every day.
There's all kinds of stuff going on.
It's pretty crazy. Anyway, another one is to not be afraid to get a little bit of sun exposure.
Yeah.
I think people have gone a little nutso with...
Well, I've read about how a lot of Americans in particular, you know, can be vitamin D deficient. And when you look at the issues with depression and that kind of stuff we have in this country, I think that perhaps some of the... That can be causing some of that because, you know, your body produces vitamin D. It's actually not a vitamin. That's kind of a weird, it's weird that we call it a vitamin. It's actually a hormone, which is why your body makes it from the sun. So yeah, you can supplement it. You know, they add it to milk. It's actually in pastured milk, but when you pasteurize it, it kind of deletes it.
Yeah.
So then they add it back in. But I mean, the best place to get it is by getting a little bit of sun. You don't need a ton of sun. You know, 15 minutes three times a week is more than enough to get your vitamin D. And of course, it depends on the day. Cloudy days, you're not going to get quite as much. In the winter, you're not going to get hardly any. You're not going to necessarily get it through glass, that kind of thing. But getting a little bit of, you know, you can't put on sunscreen and then expect to get vitamin D. You're not going to, your skin's not going to, you know, you're not going to, your body's not going to make it. But yeah, I think we're a little oversensitive to sun as far as causing skin cancer and a little undersensitive to the fact that a lot of the toxins in our shampoos, body products can be exacerbating the skin cancer problem. I'm not going to say the sun doesn't cause skin cancer, but I'm going to say that it's not the only thing that causes it.
Right.
And that maybe all of these other things we're talking about, eating a healthier diet. I used to get sunburn. I grew up on the equator, so my skin was pretty sensitive and I got sunburnt. You know, here and there, my parents always put sunscreen on me. But then as you read later on, then you read, well, the sunscreen that they had back then was actually even worse because it blocked you from one kind of rays but not the other, and then it didn't block you from the kind of rays that actually cause skin cancer. So then your skin didn't pigment and tan to protect itself, so essentially you were like breaking down your body's natural defense mechanism and making it not work. So, you know, I've had precancer taken off of my face 10 years ago now, and I started doing a lot of reading at that point. And then I was on a medication once that was a patch. So it was like a 2-inch square that I would put on once a week. And when I was doing that, I was thinking to myself, that's interesting. This tiny little square on my skin and my body absorbs enough that I don't have to take multiple pills a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this tiny little patch. Now, what effect is it having when I put lotion on my entire body?
Yeah.
I mean, what am I absorbing from that? And that's when I started reading about skincare products and that kind of thing. And I read a book called The Green Beauty Guide, which is very, very good. And that really kind of changed some of my perspective. And then I started incorporating a lot healthier diet. And now I use a mineral sunblock when I go out in the sun, if necessary. I actually rarely use a sunblock. I tend to wear a hat. And not really worry that much about it. I think eating a healthy diet is going to be one of your best defenses against getting skin cancer. And I use coconut oil, which has proven to be a pretty effective sunscreen for me, unless I end up in Florida in February and my skin's not acclimated to the sun yet. But
well,
and just don't be, I mean, it's not like you need to go overboard and lay out all day, but
and when you say you don't worry about it too,
I wear long sleeve shirts. If I'm out, I try to avoid the sun between certain hours, but I also have to almost make a concerted effort to make sure I am in the sun during the times of the day when you're getting the most vitamin D in order to get the vitamin D, because issues like depression kind of run in my family. So I try to make sure I'm getting enough from the best possible source. Because while you can supplement and get it from cod liver oil and that kind of thing, it's like anything else. Your best option is the way it's supposed to be, which is getting a little bit from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And your body kind of stores it. You know, it's interesting how our body's made. So it's made to store up vitamin D during the summer and then use a little bit of it over the winter. But the problem becomes when you don't store up any over the summer and then you've got nothing to go on for the winter. Mm-hmm. So, and the cod liver oil can help a little bit balancing that out, but you're going to be best off if you, you know, don't go crazy, but
yeah,
try it. Get a little bit of real sun here and there on your skin and see if you don't notice that you have a little bit more energy and you're sleeping better at night and your moods are better and more stable and you don't get sick as easily. I mean, it boosts your immune system. Vitamin D deficiency is linked to all kinds of diseases, cancer, autoimmune diseases, that kind of thing. So yeah, be a little less strict about
mm-hmm.
slathering up with every hint of sun and get a little bit of vitamin D.
And you kind of mentioned the slathering up for the next one, but using non-toxic beauty products, soaps, shampoos, lotions.
Switch. And it can be as easily as a bar. Think outside the bottle and use a bar of soap in the shower because mm-hmm. non-toxic soap, I mean, every farmer's market pretty much has someone selling goat milk soap or something like that, which is going to be a good non-toxic option for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then for lotion, crack open a can of coconut or a jar of coconut oil, mm-hmm. Which is going to be, and that's kind of like eating herbs and spices because coconut oil is really good for you. And if you're slathering it on your skin, you're absorbing vitamins, minerals, and all kinds of things from that. And the reason I started using coconut oil is because I read an article from, it was an Asian country, I believe, may have been like the Philippines. I think they have a tendency to use a ton of coconut oil. An article about how over there in the hospitals, when they have patients who can't eat and who are kind of like in a coma, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. they rub coconut oil on their bodies because they believe that it's good for the immune system. It helps if you read up on the health benefits of coconut, I'm not going to go through coconut oil. I'm not mm-hmm. going to go through all of them here, but and you can absorb it through your skin. So it's like eating healthfully without having to eat anything, but putting coconut oil on your skin, and it smells great and it's great for your skin and it's non-toxic and it's going to be way cheaper in the long run than buying whatever mm-hmm. from the store. So, yeah.
And so the next thing is to, which kind of wraps everything together, is to start small, but to start eliminating boxes, to go look in your pantry, and if there's something in there that your family enjoys, like mac and cheese, instead of cracking open a box of mac and cheese and making it for your family, why not try to make that from scratch, or to try mm-hmm. to at least try a healthier alternative.
Mm-hmm.
To whatever those different things are, but just start eating less processed foods.
Mm-hmm. And the best way is to look at the back, like I said, as when I make the decision, look at the ingredient list.
Yeah.
If you're trying to decide between two different things, instead of cream cheese, maybe use Greek yogurt or sour mm-hmm. cream. I mean, if you look at the ingredients in sour cream, it's got gums and stabilizers and all kinds of stuff in it. Find a Greek yogurt that's milk and cultures and use that instead. You know, it can be as simple as little tiny things like that. And you're not going to really notice the difference between sour cream and Greek yogurt. You're probably going to like Greek yogurt better if you get a good Greek yogurt. And you're probably going to save money because it's probably going to be cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like sour cream, I have this one cake recipe that calls for sour cream, but I use Greek yogurt in it because that's what I have around since I make it. And I use it instead of cream cheese in some recipes too. So,
but you can start making these small changes and start moving, you know, yourself and your family towards a healthier lifestyle, but not it be this huge, you know, one day your pantry's full of all the boxes and the next day you know,
feeding your kids oat groats for breakfast.
Yeah, yeah, and it's
although
all
oat groats can be very delicious.
All right, kids, we're all gonna eat sauerkraut for breakfast today. You know, with our eggs and mushrooms, and they'll be like, "What?" But if you make that change slowly and start incorporating those things into your meals and into your lifestyle, and that's why I said at the beginning that it's not a diet.
Right.
We have some.
And you're well learned in this because you were the person that was along for the ride that
because I when I grew up, my family is very, I don't know what you want to call it, normal, like traditional diet, as far as traditional,
but I
right
think
word
extra
either.
Bland,
yeah, extra bland,
I think,
but
extra
we ate hamburgers and french fries, you know, my grandma would make them, but hamburgers and french fries probably 3 to 4 nights a week, you know, meatloaf another night, but very bland, not a lot of additives in there. Meatloaf was hamburger with an egg and some breadcrumbs, and that was it. So, you know, very just sort of normal average American diet growing up, and not a lot of vegetables, not a ton of vegetables. We did eat vegetables, but not, you know, a ton of them, and a lot of times from a can. So yeah, it's been a slow change for us. I mean, we've done it over many years. But yeah, you started out by slipping stuff into the spaghetti sauce,
chopped spinach. Like I would buy spinach and cook it and puree it and mix it in with just about everything I made. And I would grate zucchini into the spaghetti sauce, and he hated mushrooms. So I would put mushrooms and stuff, but I would chop them up really finely because mushrooms are really great. They have like a natural form of MSG, which MSG is used in a lot of stuff because it's a flavor enhancer. So it kind of boosts the flavor and makes everything else around it taste better, which is why it's put in everything. So mushrooms kind of contain a natural form of MSG, and adding mushrooms to just about any dish is going to heighten the flavors of everything else around it and make everything else taste better for some reason. So I started chopping them up really finely and throwing them in spaghetti sauce, and I made this sloppy joes that was mostly vegetables and mushrooms in with a little bit of meat in like the sloppy joe sauce and that kind of stuff, and slowly you came around to the point where you will eat sauteed mushrooms now for breakfast.
It wasn't bad. Which is where probably the controversy from that phrase comes
bad.
From it's not bad. Which, you know, to me means it's good, but to Susie means it's
not bad.
One step above terrible.
Yep.
So yeah. But that's how the transition started. But now it's, like I said, it's more lifestyle. It's not a diet. I see our friends, you know, posting this time of the year because everybody's thinking about bathing suits, that, you know, they're going on these crazy diets. And I won't mention her name, but one person that obviously gave up Diet Coke for a month.
Oh, yeah.
And so she was so excited that the month was over so that she could have a Diet Coke. And you know, I was just thinking to myself, geez, I mean,
she was my same friend in college. She would say, oh, I need to lose weight, so all I'm going to eat this week is rice. And she would only eat rice for a week.
But it's, and not that, you know, again, any of those things are bad in and of themselves, but I just always think it's interesting that people torture themselves and to do away with things rather than trying to find something that can satisfy that that urge that's healthy.
Right. And I really think that the root of a lot of cravings and that kind of thing is that your body is not being nourished. And that's your body trying to tell you that it needs more food, but what it really needs is just nourishing food.
Right.
And I've noticed definitely a huge difference when we started a couple of years ago, after we'd been eating healthfully for a couple of years. And, you know, we did little things here and there. My body definitely now, I don't crave anything anymore. I don't get hungry between meals. I don't need snacks. You know, my body is now knows that it's being nourished. And I think that once you start making small changes, you're going to notice a big difference, I think, and particularly in those kinds of areas, because your body's going to be getting what it needs.
Well, and we also notice too that when we, like when we take a trip, mm-hmm. and we can't have the food that we normally mm-hmm. have, and we're you know, maybe eating at restaurants or going here, going there, or eating mm-hmm. on the road, you know, we're still eating good food, but it's more kind of snacks rather than full meals, but not getting the full complement of what we normally get, we can definitely tell the difference. I mm-hmm. mean, in our energy levels and just in the way you feel in general.
I think fermented foods play a huge role in that too, yeah. because do you remember we went out Friday night and ate at a local restaurant that serves good local food? Mm-hmm. I got lobster mac and cheese, which was fantastic. You got a wood-fired pizza. And we ate there, good food, not loaded with preservatives, cooked fresh, you know, vegetables, that kind of thing. But because there was no fermented food in that meal,
mm-hmm.
we were both just like kind
burping
of
and
had a little bit of indigestion and, yeah. and full and just, you know, you don't get that when you're, and I mean, our bodies are super used to having fermented stuff or cultured stuff or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, probiotics, I should say, with every meal. But yeah, I mean, you notice a huge difference in those kinds of respects. So I don't know. Yeah. I'd like to hear everybody else's tips.
Yeah.
I'm sure I have a lot more. A lot of mine end up, I mean, I'm pretty fringe on some of the things we do. Like right now, this is a funny one. So Brian's not so keen on this one.
Oh, jeez. No.
And I love sour fermented stuff. I mean, I can eat spoonfuls of vinegar. Love, love, love it.
Well, and I like certain vinegars.
But so I'm trying to get Brian to drink a glass of kefir every day, because kefir is like a great thing to drink. It's, you know, one of the best fermented cultured drinks you can drink. And for those of you who don't know, I mean, I have the kefir grains, and so I culture my own milk, the raw milk that we get, but I gave Brian a glass of that, and it's like fizzy, and it's slightly alcoholic because of the just the yeasts and stuff that are in it, but
it tasted like ranch dressing. It tasted like I was drinking a cup of ranch dressing. It was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
So this one,
she's
take
like
a little,
do you want me to put some maple syrup in there for you to make it taste? I'm like, it doesn't matter what you put in here. Then it's going to taste like ranch dressing and maple syrup. No, I don't want maple syrup in it. It's disgusting.
We'll have to try blueberries this summer.
It's terrible.
Choke it
I
down.
Still drank it, but which you came out and you're like, you said, did you drink that or did you just give it to the dog? No, I drank it. I was plugging my nose and everything else trying to get it down, but oh. And I used to like ranch dressing, but that's what it tasted like to me. Oh man, I was not expecting that. It was terrible.
I told him maybe the cows got into some ramps. That's my guess. I don't know.
That is no excuse for the taste of that beverage. I don't care what the cows got into. Oh man. Oh,
so yeah,
it just makes me like just my skin's crawling thinking about it.
We'll be working on that one.
Yeah, so we're gonna work on that one.
I'm gonna start with a shot, I guess, instead of a whole cup.
Oh, I just had to gulp it down and get it over with. But yeah, so not all experiments work out perfectly the first time.
Even here at the bucolic chance run.
Yes, even here where everything is perfect and lovely.
We have rainbows and unicorns prancing about our pasture.
But we keep trying, and that's, I think that's the biggest lesson to learn, is that trying it, you know, it doesn't hurt. But make sure you do it in a good way. We're obviously a little more adventurous because we've gone down this path. But, you know, trying new things and trying to incorporate these things into your everyday eating mm-hmm. Is just, it's a good thing to do.
I mean, I grew up in Colombia, and it's extremely rude to not eat what someone puts in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And being the honored guest, as Adam Curry would say.
Very honored and humbled.
We always got all the prize things, like the chicken head in your bowl of soup, or the chicken feet, or they would serve you beef tongue, or, you know, I mean, you get all the pig skin when you go to a pork roast, that kind of stuff. So we all learned as a young, from a young age, that you just kind of eat it, make the best of it, and after a while you actually learn to love it, you know. I mean, I was right out there with the rest of the kids slapping down giant ants and frying them in a frying pan and eating them, so you know, I mean, I was throwing elbows with the neighbor lady trying to catch the biggest ants. But you know, I mean, it's just one of those, the more you do it, the more you get used to it, the more you kind of have a sense of humor about it, and you know, that kind of thing. I think make a kind of a game out of it and just have fun doing it.
And then the more too, though, you appreciate your food,
yeah,
and you appreciate where it comes from, and all of the different parts of it, and the different flavors of it, and the different layers of flavor, and it just really helps you to live a more mindful life, right. You know.
Because food is kind of the essence of everything, I think, you know, and it's a great place to start focusing on living a little more mindfully, because it's such a big part of our days. It's a big part of your culture. If you can sit down and eat with the people, you know, in your house, it's a big part of your community. If you're buying from local farmers, it's a big part of your day. If you're eating healthfully, you know, you'll feel better and be able to do more. So, I mean, it really is kind of one of the foundations. And it's amazing that so few people put so little effort and thought into it.
Mm-hmm. So did we cover that?
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Don't you have a geek? Oh, about that topic?
Yeah.
We're moving on to the geek. But I'd love to hear everybody else's tips, by the way.
Yeah, that's...
Because that's what Amy really wanted, to hear any little tips you have, you know.
And so what are your tips?
Small, big. Yeah, what do you do? Like, what are some of the things you do to live, to be eat a little healthier or live a little healthier?
And you can leave that in the show notes. We had a lot of good responses last week to the people's five top things, five lists.
Yeah.
Everybody was sharing the five things that they want to learn, and... there were some really good ones on there. There were ones that are probably going to come on my onto my list. Yes, inspiration. And in fact,
list of 25 now.
Yeah, one of the things on my, or two of the things on my list of five. One was small engines, small engine repair, and our neighbor Matt is going to rebuild one of his classic Farmall tractors, and so I'm going to go down there and. He's going to teach me how to work on engines, which that's not really a small engine. It's a big, I think it's a 4-cylinder engine or 3-cylinder. I contacted another one of our friends who they have a small sailboat, and they're going to give me lessons on sailing when we get back in July after filming our wedding. So I'm starting to act on my list.
Do I need to buy you a special hat or...
Yeah, a little hat with like the skipper on Gilligan's Island.
Easter egg colored... plaid shorts.
Ah, and some boat shoes.
Yes.
Some Dockers.
A polo shirt.
Then we'll meet in the lobby for brandy and cigars. But, yeah, anyway. So to finish off the show tonight, we're going to have a Brian's Geeky Corner. And this one, unfortunately, only applies to those of you that either have a Macintosh computer, because that's all we have around here. And so that's really all I know about as far as apps are concerned. But if you also have an iPhone or an iPad, this is also a tip for you. There's a great app, and it used to be free, and I was looking this up tonight to share it and noticed that he started charging for it. But there's a really great app called Library Books, and you can find it at librarybooksapp.com. So if you have an iPhone or an iPad, or if you have a Mac, this is a great program. It's $2.99, but you know, probably what it saves some people. I know one of my friends, they have a bunch of kids, and so he's always got just a stack of books checked out from the library, and I'm sure when he gets library fines, they are hefty. So what it does, if it's on the desktop, it runs in your taskbar up at the top by the clock, and it just puts a little star up there with a number beside it. And depending on what color that star is, When it's black, that means that you have books checked out, and that the number beside it is how many books you have checked out. So then you can click on that, and it gives you a drop-down menu with when your books are due, how many books you have on hold, and if those books are available at the library yet. And then the other thing it does is it turns red. So every 6 hours, it pulls or it checks your books to see when they're due, and you can set it to the interval that you want a warning at. So I have ours set for 5 days, since we live kind of far from our library, about a half hour away from the library that we always go to. And so I set it for 5 days. So when the books are due, 5 days before they're due, the star turns red. So you can just look at, you know, just glance at your taskbar and see, oh, okay, I know I have books that are coming due. So it's a really great app. I use it all the time, and they have it for iPhone and iPad, and does basically the same thing. So that's at libraryapps.com, and you can find that link in the show notes along with all of the other books that we talked about, and we'll try to remember all the things that Susie mentioned and all the products, the fish oil and the
miso
and the cod liver oil, or the coconut oil, that's what I was going for. Mm-hmm. And everything else. And if you want to support the show while you're checking out the show notes and clicking on all those links, you can look in the sidebar, and there is a link over there to either do a monthly subscription. You can do $5, $10, $20 a month, or you can give us a one-time donation to help support the show and the blog. And that can be found, all of this can be found at cultivatesimple.com or at chiotsrun.com. And in the sidebar over there on the top is the most recent podcast episode. So hopefully you picked up some tips this week, and we encourage you to come back to the show notes and share your tips on how to live a healthier lifestyle. And until next week, we hope that you cultivate simple.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainsides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend. I'd rather do some thinking now. But somehow it all depends. If I could fly away from me, I'd rather see my hometown. I'd rather hold my wife. I'd rather never question things. That's the story of my life. I'd rather not be crying. I'd rather just be whole. I'd rather brave the cleansing fire. I'd rather feed my soul. If I could fly away from me to ride this wind above the tree. To fly away I'm open to suggestions. I'm crying out to you. I'm ready to be finished here. I'm ready for this season to be through. If I could fly to fly away from me, come and face the longing. Whoa.